Here are the WGXC headlines for Thursday, March 16th. National Grid and Central Hudson have restored most local electricity outages since the major snowstorm earlier this week, though a few folks still lack power. Officials in Switzerland are now trying to discourage a run on banks there, with the Swiss Central Bank loaning the Credit Suisse Bank $54 billion. A proposal in the state Senate would raise the minimum wage in New York and then tie future raises to inflation. Catskills Recycling Center has seen increased use lately, and on March 13th, the Greene County Legislature voted to spend money on new equipment to help with the increased work there. Albany County officials are considering allowing liquor stores to expand their hours to 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. between November 15th and January 7th each year. And Mets relief pitcher Edwin Diaz injured his leg celebrating a victory in the World Baseball Classic and now may not pitch this year.
Hi, this is Danette Gorman from HelpSyriasKids.org. We are connecting the Hudson community with a Syrian refugee camp in Katarmaya, Lebanon. You're listening to WGXC ACRA.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kirby Crone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, March 16th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports for the Times Union that the local nonprofit Spark of Hudson has started a new initiative called Hudson Dots, which, quote, aims to ensure warm and welcoming homes for our community, stabilize rents, and create additional affordable housing, unquote. The group is not yet adding to the local housing stock in Hudson of new affordable places to live, but is improving current conditions. The organization has bought several properties of a major Hudson landlord and is renovating the units. Tenants are relocated to other newly renovated apartments, with the option of returning to the original units once work is completed. Landlord Phil Gellert sold Spark of Hudson 7 buildings, with an 8th under contract. Gellert says he has sold 36 buildings over the years, and all but one buyer before this demanded that all tenants be evicted before the sale. Gellert said, quote, buyers would insist that I would sell the apartments vacant, and they would upgrade them, but they then would not rent to the same kind of working-class tenant that had been there. This was the first time I ever sold a building of mine to somebody that made a serious effort to improve the lives of the people who live there, unquote. Michelle Tullo, Hudson's Housing Justice Director, said the initiative was, quote, offering our residents housing stability while improving housing equality. Over the past few years, we've seen a lot of rental housing flipped and converted into vacation rentals or luxury apartments. Not only is Hudson Dots preventing displacement of residents, but it's upgrading the quality and gently increasing the rental housing supply, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrea Macko reports in Porcupine Soup that the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany has declared bankruptcy. Of the state's 8 Catholic dioceses, it is the 5th to declare bankruptcy. The action puts any child victims' sexual abuse lawsuits against the diocese on pause. The Albany diocese includes Greene County and 13 other upstate counties. Bishop Edward W. Scharfenberger blamed the bankruptcy on all the sexual abuse lawsuits filed against the church. Scharfenberger said, quote, as more Child Victims Act cases reached large settlements, our limited self-insurance funds, which have been paying those settlements, have been depleted. The Chapter 11 filing is the best way at this point to ensure that all victim survivors with pending CVA litigation will receive some compensation, unquote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Nick Reisman reports in New York State of Politics that Democrats in the New York legislature want some sort of minimum wage increase in the state budget this year. They have just not agreed on the size and scale of the increase. Currently, the minimum wage is $15 an hour in New York City and $14.20 north of Westchester County. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said, quote, "We didn't say a specific rate, but we do know we need to raise the wages of the lowest paid New Yorkers and then begin the indexing. So we'll be discussing what that is, but I think it's very, very important," unquote. Indexing means automatically increasing the minimum wage when inflation rises. Ultimately, representatives from the state Senate and Assembly will negotiate the increase with Governor Kathy Hochul. The state budget is due April 1st. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This president has put it in black and white. We look forward to seeing a plan that suggests that Social Security is off the table. This president believes the biggest threat to Social Security are those who want to cut it. His budget says no.
White House Budget Director Shalonda Young testified before the Senate Budget Committee Wednesday to defend President Joe Biden's 2024 spending plan. Republicans claim the $6.9 trillion budget will eliminate jobs and add to the national debt. GOP lawmakers are refusing to raise the nation's debt unless Democrats agree to hefty spending cuts. Senator Mitt Romney grilled Young over Biden's recent statements about Republicans floating cuts to Social Security.
I really do find that just offensive in the extreme, which is you can't name anyone who is proposing Social Security benefits. I know my colleagues. No one is proposing cutting Social Security benefits for our Social Security recipients.
Senate Republican Whip John Thune and his GOP colleagues are seeking answers from federal regulators over the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. He alleges they were asleep at the switch and should have spotted indicators of the bank's impending failure.
This clearly, if you look at the particular circumstances around this incident, should have been anticipated.
During his visit to Las Vegas Wednesday, President Joe Biden highlighted his administration's efforts to lower prescription drug costs and took aim at Republicans who he said want to cut benefits.
Let's finish the job. Let's protect the lower prescription drug costs for everyone. Let's expand health care for more people and to get care. Let's keep building the economy from the middle out and the bottom up.
Border officials testified before GOP members of the House Homeland Security Committee in McAllen, Texas, on the ongoing crisis. Chair Mark Green called out his Democratic committee colleagues who were absent from the hearing and heavily criticized President Biden and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas's border policies.
It's clear to me, in violation to the laws written by the United States Congress, passed and signed by previous presidents, this secretary of DHS wants nothing more than to flood the country with people.
Finally, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg spoke at a safety summit hosted by the Federal Aviation Administration and said he's concerned about the uptick in airline close calls following a spate of recent incidents, including one last month in Austin, Texas, where a cargo plane came within feet of landing on top of a Southwest Airlines flight.
While U.S. aviation remains an exceptionally safe way to travel, we have seen an uptick in runway incursions and close calls, something that we are not going to allow to turn into something worse.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our ATRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 2023 appears to be a breakout year for ranked choice voting, also known as instant runoff. The system has a years-long track record in Maine, successful use in Alaska last year, and adoption by over 50 municipalities. And there are proposed bills in several state legislatures this year. Instead of voting for just one person, ranked choice voting allows a voter to vote for multiple candidates, ranking them in order of preference. If a candidate gets 50% plus one vote, they win. If 50% is not reached by one candidate, the lowest vote getter is eliminated and those votes are distributed to the voter's second choice. Rounds continue until a candidate exceeds 50% plus one vote. Polling after Alaska's 2022 elections showed that over 85% of Alaskans thought it was simple to do. So far in 2023, NBC News reports that RCV bills have been introduced in Connecticut, New Hampshire, Missouri, Montana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Oregon, New Jersey, and New York. Some are considering implementation for federal and state elections, some for just primaries, and others are authorizing use in cities and towns. In Georgia, legislators are questioning the price tag of a separate runoff Senate election, which could have been avoided in November with ranked choice voting. Virginia is already testing it and has bipartisan support. Try out ranked choice voting at our website and find resources to learn more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, March 16th. Local early morning temperatures range from 17 degrees in Steventown to 31 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 34 degrees. We are going to need sunglasses again today. That snow is going to reflect that big, beautiful sun all over the place. Winds will be about 8 miles per hour, so make sure you have on at least a good jacket. A freezing morning gives way to a chilly afternoon. A high of 50 degrees happens at 5 p.m. Overnight, we dip to 34 degrees. Then, tomorrow, we get light rain all day. We get stiff winds and a high temperature of 49. Overnight, temperatures slide to 36 degrees and rain ends by daylight on Saturday. We get a high of 44 with mostly clear skies and moderate winds. Get outside, clean things up, and let's give spring a proper welcome. Sunday, still dry, but things get windy. That sap is gonna start flowing. Sunset today will be at 6:48 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:02 a.m. Looking way up, we see the polar radio blackout is finally subsiding after coronal mass ejections caused aurora activity in both hemispheres. Solar wind speed is currently 515 kilometers per second at 9.10 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5.6, storm level. The current sunspot number is 96, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
And this is Tom Rowe in Hudson. We're live in Hudson today in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church along Warren Street, bringing you the WGXC Morning Show. In just a few minutes, we're going to speak with Jody Nesbitt, the new president of the new Columbia County Republican Women's Organization that was just formed. She's going to tell us all about that. They just had their first meeting, or they're just about to have their first meeting. We're going to hear all about that on the WGXC Morning Show this morning. Stay tuned. Right. As promised, I believe we have Jody Nesbitt here on the air at WGXC. You're listening to the WGXC Morning Show. And are you there, Jody?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Jody Nesbitt is the new president of the new organization. Is it the Columbia County Republican Women's Group, or what is it called?
Republican Women of Columbia County.
And you're the new president. Tell us about yourself first and about what the new organization is.
Well, thank you for having me. I am a Columbia County resident. I've lived here, you know, most of my life. I am a mother of five, three of which live local, two of which are serving in the armed forces overseas. And the Republican Women's Club is a new club that we formed to give Republican women a place to come and express their ideas and their thoughts and, you know, serve our communities, do things that will support our communities, uplift women, uplift our communities and our veterans, our police, our firefighters, anything we can do to serve the local community.
And why don't you give out, do you have a website that you can give out while we're talking about this? People can look up, and we'll mention that your guys are having meetings on the third Monday of every month. And the first meeting is this coming Monday, March 20th at Kozel's Restaurant in Ghent at 5:30 p.m. Is that all correct?
That is correct. Yep. Our website is republicanwomenofcc.com. It is newly formed, so we don't have lots of pictures yet, but those are coming.
What is the need for a Republican women's group at this time?
Well, I think that Republican women are underrepresented, and we need more women who want to get involved and want to have our voices heard and work to leave and have a community and country and state that we can be proud of and that our children can grow up and thrive in. And that's what we're looking to do.
And locally, Republicans control, I think, most of the county-wide seats, maybe all of them. And I think one woman, Holly Tanner, is the top vote-getter locally, usually, in most elections. Is that right?
She is. She is our county clerk, and she does a lot for the community, and she can cross both aisles, and people seem to love her. We do, and we just want to have more women that are able to reach those high standards and become involved and, do whatever we can to uplift women here in Columbia County.
And I mentioned Holly partially because she's a past WGXC host, but also the top vote getter of any party in both in Columbia County usually. Is that what you're trying to do mostly? Is it trying to get more women to run for office, or are you just trying to get more women out to vote, or is it both of those things, or what is the focus?
Yeah, both of those things. If women want to run for office, we want to help them do that. We want to have more women out to vote. We just want women, if they just want to be involved locally, they don't want to be in the spotlight, they don't want to run for office, but they want to do things like we want to have a self-defense course for women. When we have people like Maxwell out on the street after being paroled, us women have to protect ourselves. We want to do Heart Awareness Month. We want to do Veterans Breakfast. We want to serve the people. And so if a woman just wants to be involved in those type of things, we will have things for her to want to do in the group. It doesn't have to be just political. It is politically orientated, but it is also very much community orientated.
And what will happen at the meeting this coming Monday, or usually at the meetings on Monday, the third Monday of the month?
Monday is our first official meeting, so we're going to focus a lot on membership get as many members as that want to join. We already are up to 12, and that's a good start for us. We will discuss the future of the organization, what kind of programs we want to do, what kind of events we want to do, what we want to be involved in. And then going forward, we're only going to meet every other month. We know women are busy. And then we can just kind of do whatever events and however we can serve the community, we can plan those events at the meeting. We are connected to the New York State Federation of Republican Women and the National Federation of Republican Women, so we are connected to both of those groups as well. We will be working with them for events that they have to, you know, throughout the year.
So this might be if people join, they might end up going to conventions around the country and meeting other similar groups?
Correct. Correct.
What are the races that you're most focused on this year? There's a number of judge elections with a couple judges retiring locally. Did I lose you, Jody? I had some funny noises, and I think maybe we lost. Yeah, that sounds. Are you still there? We'll try to get Jody back on the line. So bear with us for a second. We've got Jody Nesbitt back here on the line. Sorry for that technological problem there. Jody, are you there?
I am. So sorry about that. Not sure what happened with that. The call dropped.
Yeah. So I was asking what specific elections are you focused on this fall?
Well, this fall we do have some county races up for election, as well as most of your local races are all up for election, whether it's supervisors, we have county judges are up for election, we have a coroner that's up for election. Most of the towns have town board seats as well as town justices. Supervisors are up for election, so it's a very, there's a very busy election year for us.
I guess the county judge seats are already attracted a number of candidates because they don't come up so often. So I guess everyone will be watching those races in particular.
Yeah. On the Republican side, we have Bob Gibson and Joyce Crawford. They both will be running for county judge. So we're looking forward to those races.
And then I guess you probably are already starting preparations for 2024, since there'll be a presidential election, there'll be the congressional election trying to get Mark Molinaro reelected, and there'll be assembly races. Like it seems like the Dee Dee Barrett races in particular interest locally. It seems like people on the left are already announcing they're going to challenge her, and I'm sure you guys, the Republicans, want to challenge her also.
Yes, we do. We don't have a candidate for that yet, or at least not one that, you know, is we're talking about too much yet, because 2024 is a little while away. We are in preparations for 2024 because it will be a big year. And, you know, there's going to be a lot going on. It'll be busier than this year, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I'm just guessing that your first meetings, you'll be planning for in the immediate elections, but also doing some long-term planning for 2024.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, so that we're prepared and we can get out there and put out the best candidates that we have for Columbia County.
Are Republicans slightly worried about losing their majority in Columbia County that you've held for I guess a long time, with a lot of newcomers moved to the area during the pandemic?
I don't know if we would say worried, but you know, there is always that chance, so we always have to work hard to make sure we put out the best candidate so that we can hold on to those seats you know, here in the county.
All right, and so give us all the information about the group again, and the website, and when the meetings are, and get everybody up to date on the new group of Republican women in Columbia County.
Okay, so it's Republican Women of Columbia County. We are going to meet the third Monday of every other month. Our first meeting will be this Monday, that is March 20th, at 5:30 p.m. at Kozel's Restaurant in Ghent. Our Facebook page is Republican Women of Columbia County. That's all spelled out. You have to type the whole thing in. That'll bring you to our website. Our email is RealCCGOPWomen. And our website is RepublicanWomenOfColumbiaCounty.com. And you can log on to any of those sites. You can join from those sites. You can see what we're about. You can come to a meeting to see what we're about and decide if this is something you want to be involved in. You can contact us anyway, you know, through any of those means. And we would love to have as many women as possible that want to be involved, whether they are looking to have political aspirations or, you know, they just want to serve breakfast to our veterans. We will have all kinds of things for them to do.
All right. And continue to let us know if you're having other events or trainings or things. We'd love to publicize anything you guys are doing.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, and good luck. And again, the meeting, the first meeting is this Monday, March 20th at Kozel's in Ghent at 5:30 p.m., right?
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, and you guys have a great day.
All right. We'll get back to some Wayne Shorter on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
Well, let me adjust from the master control central. is coming on my Wami train. Boys and girls, voodoos, witchcraft, male witches, vampires. This is your midnight train to do. Are you coming? Sons and daughters of Lucifer.
The heat is really hot.
Are you coming?
Feel the hot power.
Tell your riches. Tell all you've got, take up your crest and follow me. The Grim Reaper. Come on, Zara, say hello, Lisa Kelly.
Hello, Lisa Kelly.
Hello, Zara. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Lisa Kelly.
Hello, Zara.
Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Alderi, and I'm an infectious diseases specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Hope Hickerson, and I'm a health education specialist and reporter. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician...
That's me, and a health education expert.
That's me. Talk about what you need to know to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy.
For more information about Noise Filter, your public health podcast, and to watch and share our incredible informative animations, please visit us at noisefiltershow.com.
And if you like what you hear, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to us. So, let's get started.
Animal tranquilizer mixed in street drugs. Unsuspecting drug users are increasingly at risk of hard-to-treat overdoses and dangerous side effects caused by a common animal tranquilizer which is showing up in more and more illicit drug supplies. Ugh. According to the FDA, the tranquilizer xylazine is primarily found in heroin and illicit fentanyl, and overdoses can resemble those caused by opioids. Ugh. But since xylazine is a sedative and not an opioid, it cannot be reversed by standard opioid overdose reversal methods. A desperate rescuer may try a second or third dose of this drug. When too much naloxone is taken, this in and of itself can lead to complications that lead to death when the person is suffering from extreme sedation from xylazine. Okay, because I thought, so it's only if it's in combination with this xylazine if you take too much naloxone. Because I've seen people take, like, they're like, just give it to them if they need it until they wake up. Right?
Right. I mean, you should only give one or two doses of naloxone. I mean,
okay.
You have the wrong diagnosis if after two doses, maybe three, somebody is not awoken. There's other things. You got to check their sugar. You got to check their oxygen level. You got to check their thiamine. I mean, there's other things. Now, obviously, in the street, that may not necessarily be the case, but these are, those are the things that we know in the hospital. The mnemonic tons. TONS, so thiamine, oxygen, Narcan, and sugar. That's what we do for people who come to the hospital and they're obtunded or not arousable. So in 1962, xylazine was developed as an anesthetic for veterinary procedures. Typically, it's used to sedate horses before surgery and used as a pain reliever. Due to respiratory depression and lowering of blood pressure, trials in humans were stopped. As a heroin substitute, it most likely became popular in the 2000s, but it wasn't until relatively recently that it began showing up so often in street drugs. During the pandemic, xylazine bottles purchased online with a veterinarian prescription or diverted from veterinary supply chains became popular as cheap and easy opioid fillers. This sedative can cause wounds to erupt with a scaly dead tissue called an eschar, which can lead to amputations if left untreated. For hours after use, users were also in a blackout daze, making them vulnerable to rape and robbery. When the users wake up, the fentanyl high has long faded and their cravings are strong for more, but xylazine may still be in their systems, leading to a potential fatal overdose.
FDA officials have also cautioned that the drug might go undetected in overdoses because it's not included in routine toxicology screenings. A number of street names for xylazine are being used, including Trank, Trank Dope, Sleep Cut, Philly Dope, and Zombie Drug. When a user of xylazine is in trouble, the best course of action is to check if the individual is breathing, protect the head and airways, administer one dose of naloxone, and call for assistance. You know, everybody... I know as a health educator, I've learned, you know, how to administer naloxone and how it's so, everybody was so excited about it because we saved lives. I cannot imagine coming upon someone, you're trying to save their life, it's not working, you don't know why. Like, it's bad enough that people are taking this drug, but then for the people who are trying to help and you're like, oh my God, like I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. And it's not working. What do I do now? Like, this person may have,
Also think about this, you know, something that I've thought about often. And again, this is coming from a place of extreme privilege in our society.
Wow.
That you are going to go to a complete stranger, purchase something from this complete stranger that you have no idea what it is. And then inject it into yourself, like the mindset to be in a place where that is considered the right thing to do at the moment. And I understand what, you know, I understand the cravings and the addiction, the monkey on your back and all that for with opioid dependence. But man, and so this is why we need to be kind to everybody, but society stigmatizes obviously opioid use disorder. But again, this substance is xylazine, and it's known as trank dope, sleep cut, or zombie drug.
Zombie drug.
Because that's what I want to do. I want to pass out on the street so bad that I am left vulnerable for somebody to come upon my body, do with it what they will. But this is this is American life. I mean, it's hard out there.
It is.
We need to be kind and loving to everybody. Study finds alcohol and tobacco use shared among diverse ancestries. Alcohol and tobacco use can cause approximately 5 to 15% of deaths worldwide, respectively, and are associated with chronic illnesses such as cancer. Several physical and mental illnesses are associated with smoking and drinking, including cardiovascular disease and psychiatric disorders. Environmental and social factors influence both tobacco consumption and alcohol consumption, but genetics can also play a role.
So a study involving nearly 3.4 million people with African, American, East Asian, and European ancestry identified more than 3,500 genetic variations that likely affect smoking and drinking behavior. Using data collected from samples from different ancestries, researchers discovered that the genes related to alcohol and tobacco use behaviors were strikingly similar in samples from different ancestries, with 80% of the variants having a consistent effect across all populations studied.
In part, the similarity across ancestries may be due to the fact that the vast majority of non-European groups included in the study live in the U.S., where they're likely to experience similar environmental influences such as public health policies and alcohol and tobacco availability. Middle Eastern and Indian populations where smoking is often prevalent were not included in the analysis. The analysis would be more accurate and would be able to identify more genetic associations if these populations were included.
As a result, the researchers acknowledge that their sample does not represent the full diversity of genetic ancestry and geography across the globe. They stated that in future phases of the study, they will welcome collaborations from other investigators who have access to additional data sets to further expand their studies.
That being said, it's incredibly interesting to look at genetic factors that may lead to an overdependence on alcohol and tobacco, and to find that in a huge study of over 3 million people, the genetic factors largely tracked between populations. So often, especially with items that are considered to be vices, those who don't face a challenge with these substances cannot understand why others do so. Can't they just face their free will to stop their bad habits? But we never know which of the 3,500 genetic factors each individual might have. So let's take this as a reminder to practice some empathy and perhaps, instead of judging, try to help.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and leave us a review letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Hickerson, at hopehickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefiltershow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
Up South, Reflections on the Great Migration, an exhibition at Opalka Gallery. And it's me, Andrea Cunliffe, speaking with Ramson the artist. He's giving us a tour through the gallery, which is being installed as we speak.
So when you first come in, you're going to see the altar, sort of sacrifice.
This is an altar to your family?
Well, it's for the people who migrated. This is the altar. So, you know, we have sort of church windows. This is how I sort of saw them. And so they have these arches to the top. And on those, we have pictures, like family members. I wanted to put shelves and connect to that idea that these could be in someone's home. And these are pictures on the shelves of family members. And they're basically saying goodbye to them. because they're going to make their way up north. We have a wallpaper. We have something like a bottle. All things of memory and the house itself. So things that people would remember once they're gone.
I just saw the broom.
There's a tricycle here. And then in front of it, we have suitcases. And
jars. Are there messages in the jars?
No, well, actually, those are candles. And those are going to be lit.
And then you've got cotton coming in.
Yeah, we got cotton and flowers.
I'm going to go home and make
an altar. And then you move through the exhibit.
There's three art pieces that are couples. Decollage?
Yeah. It's a French term, which means removing a paper. You glue pieces of paper together, and you pull them apart, and you have accidents. All sorts of strange things happen. Sometimes you even wet the paper as well, and sometimes the pink could dye into another color. These are part of my love series. It's really about love in hard places to live, in very rural areas. They don't have a lot of close neighbors. And they're farming, and it's sort of a harsh land, but yet there's love there.
Just beautiful, and yet the texture behind and the color in their clothing. Yeah. I don't know why that emotionally, this one especially, really got me.
Well, you know, they're all hugging each other. And it's something that we all, as humans, can sort of relate to.
And these wonderful pillars, would you call them pillars?
They're called the block.
Okay.
Referencing Romare Bearden's block, which he did a large collage of a New York City street. The idea of this is contemporary. So these are kids of today. We happen to be looking at a mother here, which we have to have, and we have James Baldwin there.
Yes.
Everything else over here, for example, this is a young man. But you can change these almost like an exclusive corpse.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you can interchange them. So on the one we see in the far distance there, we see a man's head but a female's body. So the question is,
right.
Is he transing? Or is he, this is what you see, but this is how he feels on the inside. So those are things that young people are dealing with today. That's what these sort of represent. You know, Baldwin has become very popular again, his writings with the Black Lives Matter movement. And we have a mother who's always watching over us and praying. That's sort of a reference that we'll find throughout the exhibit as well.
This is a lovely collection in the back wall here.
Yeah.
So they're independent, individual paintings.
They're all 8x8 wood panels. There's 100 of them, and they represent the 100 counties in North Carolina, which is where I'm from. And as you see, right in the center here is Rich Square. This is where I was born.
Uh-huh.
And then they're close together, and then they start moving across the wall. They start feathering out.
Okay.
So the idea is they're going out into the world and bringing a little bit of North Carolina with them. Which is everyone does when they leave their home state. They bring a little bit of where they came from with them. So that's what this is about.
It's everything from individual people to maps to...
Yeah, well, there's a map on each one of them. And these are cities and areas in North Carolina. Again, you're sort of taking that part where you were from with you out into the world. So flowers, greenery.
Each one is like a jewel.
Yeah, they're like really individual collages that are put together to make one large collage.
Incredible.
That's the idea. Yeah.
What fun. Well, what fun.
Yeah, it looks great.
No wonder it took you 2 years, right?
Yeah. Been working on this for a while.
And these two here really stunned me, these paintings. This large one here with two people.
All duality.
And in the middle of their table, which is this pretty little tablecloth.
There's two things in the table, which actually makes an X for, like, this is a target area, is flowers that represent good thoughts, and the gun represents mean thoughts, violent thoughts. And it's a couple there, a male and a female, and that's usually where decisions are made, and often in homes, at the kitchen table. At least where I growing up, you know, I saw lots of decisions made at the kitchen table. And so the question is, is it violent or a mean decision, or is it a good decision or a more holy decision? And if we look really closely, you'll see a church on each one. It has a church, top and bottom, and each one has a juke joint. A juke joint is like a club, a dance club.
Right.
Those are sort of names they called them in the 40s and 50s in the South. And so, again, those decisions you make between church or going to a club. And it's rounds, there's no squares in this. It's even, it's duality. And you can turn this painting the other way and have the woman at the top and the man at the bottom. There's no top or bottom in this painting.
That's really interesting, depending on who,
exactly.
How, where you hang it.
Exactly.
And this one, too, was really disturbing in a weird way.
It is. It's meant to. This is about the history of blues and how blues is in all the music we hear today, mm-hmm. and so how blues went out into the world. So they sort of go hand in hand, music and violence in this country. You know, it's in the music we listen to, clubs, fights between men. You know, you took my girlfriend. So this is really about blues going out into the world along with violence as well in America, sort of developing and growing out as the world.
But yeah. You can't blame blues. You can't blame violence on blues.
No, I'm not blaming on any. This is really about all music. The title comes from a rap song. Who We Be is a rap song by DMX. I'm talking about blues is in all music, and the violence is in all music. It's an American problem because we have a love for our music and our guns in this country, unfortunately.
This is lovely. It's Sunday going to church.
Yeah, come Sunday. Yeah, yeah.
That's refreshing.
Yeah, after dealing with those things. Well, yeah, so, you know, this is really about how people make a way to go to get to church. That's what this painting is really about. It's about them sort of coming on Sunday. And I once read that enslaved people, you know, they didn't have anything to sort of buy new clothes. Sometimes they would have one outfit just for Sunday. Or on Sunday, they would take flowers and rub on them to create like a perfume. They would try to decorate their hair with flowers and things, which is all part of my practice, this idea of taking what's around you and using it to create something. These people have sort of gathered things around them to sort of go to church. For a lot of poor African Americans, this is the one time they get to dress up and wear that shirt and tie or that nice dress, because that's not the type of employment they do on a day-to-day basis. But Sunday is the time for them to dress up. And so it's a very strong tradition in an African American community to women wearing hats and men dressing up and looking at finest on Sunday, because that's the time they can wear those outfits.
We did.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
All these things are universal, but they're really universal things that I'm dealing with all the time.
It's the gathering of the community. And I see these people are enjoying themselves,
yeah.
whether they're coming by boat or by horse or hopping over the creek.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really a joyous piece. Mm-hmm. Well, there's three paintings.
Yeah, it's a triptych. And, you know, the horizontal, the two pieces on the side, and the vertical, it's a church going up higher. I'm not sure where the ideas come from, but that was one that I really liked a lot, the idea of the church being taller than...
And there's a whole thing about the shape of the steeple, that it's meant to... say, point the way to God.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, which I find fascinating, you know. And even in early America, it was the tallest structure in the area.
It's not only the beauty or the religious aspect, it's practical.
Sure.
Here's it safe.
Yeah.
You can see it in the distance.
Part of it as well, the idea you can find Christ, you can find a place of worship where you are.
And safe.
Yes,
safety.
Exactly. Yeah, safe place. Safety. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
This one.
Wow. This looks stunning. I love it. Well, thank you. Thanks.
Look.
This is about lynching.
This is about lynching.
Yeah, it's about lynching. These are basically boxes, places for sanctuaries for these people who were lynched. I'm focusing on women here.
Did they lynch women?
They actually, women and children and even a dog was lynched with his owner. Because often you don't know anything about these people except for their names. What about them? I want to know more about them as people. So I'm basically asking a series of questions by doing these boxes.
And these nails are sticking out of the
boxes.
Yeah,
that's to protect them. That's based on sort of an African sculptures that have nails sticking out of them to protect them, to ward off evil spirits.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Yeah.
Here's like a piece of a glass, like an eyeglass.
Well,
or
see, I like it to be open. This to me is one of the most interesting ones here, although all of them have interesting stories. This one is they're looking for this man to lynch, and he's found with this woman, and they lynched both of them. Originally, they thought that was his wife, and then they realized that it's not his wife, so she's unknown. So the reason why the locket doesn't have a picture in it is because we don't know anything about her. We don't know who her family is. That's why that's one of the most powerful ones to me. So those are the things I'm sort of dealing with here. It's all very hard things, but it's part of a history that we have to reckon with. And that's what these six boxes are for, about those things. Yeah, yeah, it's tough stuff. Yeah.
And this has been Andrea Cunliffe for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, speaking with Ramson at his exhibition, Up South, Reflections on the Great Migration. At Opaca Gallery.
I'm not looking around for recommendations. finger raised, everyone's got something to say. Everybody, body wants to simplify the situation. Palms up, little smirk, slow head shaking, trying to explain. It's true, nobody's got a clue. Everyone wants to be told what to do. So clap on the one, say soup on the two, and go now. Soup! Call the number, misinformation's on the other end. Now snap on the one, on the three. Say go ready, go ready. Do the dials on the low.
That was 2020 new music from Chick Chick Chick, 3 exclamation points. The song is called Do the Dial Tone.